This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 397 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
And after 2 years of not, almost 2 years, not quite, of not doing this, we are starting
back.
Up
our we're back.
Sixth. I mean, we have not been gone, but we're starting up our sixth season of episode discussions from TV.
It's back.
Yeah. So how are you feeling about being back, girl?
I'm tired, y'all.
You're tired. Yes, we're tired from the book, and I'm tired from doing, like, getting up five episodes, like, in 4 days, so it's a lot, but we have a few more to go, because we're interviewing. No, we're not. We are recording this almost a week before the premiere, the March 6th premiere. Not quite, but almost. So it'll be early. In case this is your first time listening to us doing an episode discussion of the TV show, or it's your first episode with us, period. Welcome, first of all. Welcome, welcome. I'm Ginger, and she is Summer, and we are sisters, not
Nobody thinks that lovers. Anymore. Why do you got to say that again?
Because there is some people, or at least one person, thought that at one point, and we never clarified, early days, we never said what our relationship was. We just, I guess people thought we were friends, or I don't know, but some people thought we were
not friends.
Lovers. Yeah, that's not what we are. And I, mostly me, tend to break into song like I just did. You're welcome. Summer can sing. She just doesn't usually break into stuff, not as often as I do, but she does sometimes. Anyhow, so that's us. We are, as you heard, episode 397. We're almost to 400. We've been doing this since the summer of 2013, so before the show even actually came out. I thought it was almost 8 years. No, Summer, it is almost 9 years.
Shut your face.
I know. I was like, it's almost a decade. Like, I can't handle the decade number yet. And we just found out a few days ago that there's going to be a spinoff. And we both went, I don't even know if we should share our...
I didn't anything. I just sent it to you because I was like, I'm not even going to say anything. I'm just going to send
right.
this to you.
Summer sent it to me in a text, and my response was, what did I send you? What did I tell you?
Wasn't it just like a crying emoji?
Well, maybe not. I just spat at myself. It may have included that, but I responded, you're rude.
Well, yeah, but I'm like, I didn't do it.
You shared it.
Well, I wouldn't want you to be scooped by anybody else.
Scooped, Summer. It was an article that was out there for the world.
I know it was, but I wanted to be the one to tell you.
Exactly, which is why you're rude.
You wouldn't have wanted to hear it from anyone other than me. I deliver the news as gently as I can.
Fitting that it comes from you, but there's a whole lot of people I wouldn't mind hearing it from.
Yeah, I'm sure if Ron Moore called you on the phone to tell you that they were going to do a prequel, you probably would accept the phone call.
We don't talk that much anymore. Just the one time.
Yeah, I was like, just that one time.
Just that one time at band camp.
It wasn't band camp.
So that's who we are. This is kind of what we do. We've been doing this for quite a while now. Almost a decade, not quite, but almost definitely. It'll be 9 years in August or September, I think. Anyway, we have been fans of the books since the 90s. Summer found the books in 97. She tried to get me to read them pretty quickly, and I said, sure, maybe one day, and I didn't get there till 99, but by the skin of my teeth, I made it under the 2000s. So, fans since the 90s, reading the books, going to book signings, going to, Scottish Games, which Diana, when she was not as famous as she is now, she could go to those things and not be mobbed. yeah, so I've been to several of her signings before the show ever came out and exploded. So yeah, pretty much anything you could imagine. We have like I said, followed, we do, the format of our show is we do a read along, yes, chapter by chapters. We do not read the chapters. We discuss the chapters. So we do a chapter by chapter read along discussion of each book. And yes, you heard that correctly, of each book, of each chapter. It's a lot. Did you hear Summer say she was tired? It's a lot. So of each book, before the quote-unquote corresponding is in quotes because after season five, well, number one, they're not like identical adaptation, right? It's an adaptation, not a copy, number one. Number two, after what they did in season five, which was fine, but after what they did in season five and they brought some of book six back into a series, you know, I guess backward, it really messed with our brains. And if you don't know what we mean by that, if you haven't read the books, God bless you. If you have read the books, you know what we mean. And using the show, you know what we're talking about. So we've had an interesting read along with book six. We just finished it. And so the format of the show is we do a read along for so many weeks or months, or in this case, years. And followed by the episode by episode discussion of the TV show as it's airing. So on the 6th, the show 601 will go live. As soon as 601 is done, our show will go out. If it's not right away, it'll be up by midnight the same day as the show. And we also do I think since season 3, it's actually right after the show. So when the show ends on the East Coast, we're here on the West Coast, and we do a live after show where we chat about the episode that just finished airing. So we will be starting that again after episode 1 on the 6th. Something else, which is, it's something we do. Other people do it too. We're not the only ones. We, in 2018, we started, we took our first tour, our first international Outlander themed tour to Scotland, where we saw historical locations, filming locations, all kinds, and you know, a whiskey distillery tour, and to a certain degree, a small degree, the trips can be, you know, little side things can be added with given time, but yeah, so we had our first tour, and it's called Pod Abroad, like the podcast goes abroad, girl, right? So Pod Abroad, which Summer came up with that name, in 2018, we repeated. We went back in 2019, and we're going to go in 2021, and then once COVID came, you know, it wasn't going to happen. So we are now going in 2022, in just a few months, so in May of this year. So we have a very few spots left. If you're interested at all, you can find out all about the itinerary, the dates, what we're going to see, where we're going to stay, and the cost, etc. Go to podabroad.com. That's podabroad.com.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Hannah.
And now on to our episode discussion of Outlander Season 6, Episode 1, entitled Echoes. And we should just say this was the longest cold open I've ever experienced.
So before the cold open, there was a reflection, basically.
Mm-hmm. Like a voiceover recap.
Have they ever done that? Or has it been so long that I forgot that they've done that? Or do you remember seeing something like that for seasons 2, 3, or 4, or 5?
No, I don't recall them doing that. However, I think it was they felt a responsibility to do it since they've already junked up our timeline from the books with last season. So I think they're like, okay, so I know that we started a little bit of Breath of Stone Ashes last year, but but we normally stick a book to a season. So let's just get you caught up on where we are in a Breath of Stone Asses.
That's it. A Breath of Snow and Asses. Oh, in a breath. That's great.
In a Breath of Snow and Ashes, so that you, as a reader and or viewer, if you're only a viewer, I mean, then it's been 2 years, right? And if you're a reader / viewer, here's where we are. Here's where we're caught up to. Also, we watch screeners, and generally our screeners don't have previews or recaps. The screeners this year do, well, at least the first episode, they have the recap, the big recap.
So the one thing or another thing we do not get, and I can't see this changing on any of the screeners we've seen in the past, let alone this season, is one thing you'll notice that we don't do. And you may be like, well, how can you guys not talk about this? This is a big deal. So we literally only discuss the episode. That's it. We do not, we might make predictions about things or say how we want something or what we'd like to see or wonder what's going to happen in an episode or in the season. However, we've gotten comments before, not bad comments, just people wondering like, I can't believe you didn't notice this, or I can't believe you didn't comment on this. Talking about the part that comes at the end of the episode where it says next time on Outlander. Yeah, we don't get those. So we only see that if we, like, I know that's available once the episode is aired. That's usually available in some kind of, not really, I guess, a trailer, a preview, whatever. They usually make a snippet of it. It's on Starz YouTube channel, or it's somewhere. It's always circulating around, right? Or if you have Starz, or if we have Starz, we can go to Starz and then view it there. So it's not like it's inaccessible to us. But because we, number one, because we get screeners, and number two, because we record on purpose early, so that we can have, you know, go about our lives the rest of the week. Otherwise, we would be literally
a week behind.
At least a few days behind, if not a week. So that is why, in case you've ever wondered, or in case you're new and you're just maybe gonna wonder, we do not get any of the next on Outlander bits at the end, which is kind of so. As having screeners, like, look, I'm not going to tempt fate. Like, I'm happy. I'm not going to complain at all.
But we may have something to say about it in the live after show.
Oh, well, to do that, we would have to see it, which means to see it, we'd have to go search it out. That's what I'm saying. So a lot of times we'll be in the live after show and someone will say, oh, did you see the part at the end where they gave us a thing about it? And I'm like, no.
So the only important thing to take away from this particular portion is that any predictions we make are solely based on guessing.
So basically, yes, as Summer said, it is probably, not probably, this is the longest cold open we've had with this show. Maybe in existence. I don't know. So 601, the cold open begins with the men at Ardsmuir.
We're going to take a trip back to book 3.
But they wanted to give us a look and feel for how fractured this group was. I mean, anyone in prison doing hard labor in any century has the right to be pissed off. You cannot not give them that. And if you're already like not in the best mood because you're imprisoned, right? And you're probably, you don't have the best diet, you're probably cold. It's not a great situation. It's not a great environment. No one would deny that.
It's not supposed to be.
No, of course not. But you have, the equivalent of basically, I mean, I don't know if you call them quite gangs, but the equivalent of an Ardsmuir religious gang. I don't know what fractured that population we saw there was predominantly religion, because most, if not all of them, at least the Jacobites, the people, the men there were Jacobites or were Scottish, the prisoners, basically McDo and the Catholics and Tom Christie and the Protestants, right? That's the overall setup they're trying to get us through. If you knew nothing else about the entire cold open, that's what you need to know, right? It's Jamie, who is known as McDo, son of Brian the Black, son of McDo and the Catholics, and Tom Christie and the Protestants, to give us kind of a foreshadowing, or at least I guess foreshadowing is the best way, a glimpse into what their relationship was like at Ardsmuir before Tom arrives on the ridge.
I think that the subtitle of this whole chapter, not chapter, I'm so stuck in read-along, this whole episode.
It's been the longest read-along ever.
I know. So the subtitle for this episode should be measuring, because the whole thing is about
true. It is.
Who's
it
got
is.
A bigger
All
penis.
All throughout.
The entire thing.
All throughout. So, okay. So there's a loony old dude named Charlie, and he thinks he's King James. King James, remember, was not... obviously, it was Bonnie Prince Charlie's father. So fights are breaking out between the Catholic and the Protestant prisoners. Tom Christie, who'd already been there before Jamie arrived, enjoyed somewhat of a leadership role, right? And the Catholics who were there were definitely treated, I mean, by prisoners, and probably not so differently by the governor, Harry Quarry, as kind of second-class citizens, if you will. So the governor has requested Jamie's presence at dinner.
And for the timing of this, we should know that this is all before Lord John Grey shows up.
Correct. This is the original governor of the governor who was there when Jamie arrives, which is Harry Quarry. So Jamie goes to dinner and he sees Tom Christie already sitting there.
Nobody ate dinner that night.
Well, maybe the governor did. And the governor basically says, don't do anything further to aggravate these Jacobites. We don't need you here, Red Jamie. We don't need you here causing more of a ruckus. Look, I've got my dude here. We've got our thing here. Don't rock the boat, okay? And it doesn't really help the problem, though, right? It doesn't, him telling Jamie that, because look, I'll tell you a secret. That's not a secret. Jamie didn't do anything. His presence absolutely might be causing some rumblings because they've got McDoo there and people are, you know, he's known. He's respected. So he can't help his presence. But the governor telling him not to do anything, like he literally hasn't done anything yet. He's chained still. He didn't even have his hands free. So he's not trying to practice or you know, leverage any kind of power. He's just him. Now, did you catch? I mean, if you've watched it two or three times, you can't almost have, it's hard to have missed it. If you watched it one time, you could have missed it. But did you catch the secret handshake between the governor and Tom Christie?
Honestly, I wasn't looking at their hands, but it became very clear that it had happened later when he went back and asked to be a Freemason.
Yes. So you missed it. Okay. So I missed it the first time. I saw it the second and or third time and I had to rewind it. And I was like, wait a second. Because yeah, Jamie had to have a reason to go ask to be made a Freemason. In the prison cell, it's kind of dark. And there's a young dude like shuffling. He's on his hands and knees and he's shuffling around to find something on the floor. And Jamie's like, yo, what up, dude? Out of my space. And we find out that he's going blind and he's looking for a lock of hair of his sweetie that I believe had fallen out of a locket or something that he had. And he's telling Jamie how much he loves this girl and how before Jamie had come, Tom Christie, probably everyone there knows about it. Because when you're sharing a cell with 20 plus men, there ain't no secrets, right? Everybody knows everybody's secrets. When what Tom Christie had told him with regard to his missing his girl was rely on God. But this young man is not only distraught because he misses her, he's also beginning to forget what she looks like. And that's possible whether you're going blind or not. Like that's just out of time, out of, you know, when something's not there or when you don't see it a lot, it can be easy to begin to feel an image of something fade. And Jamie says that, quote, what we have known, some never will. So he's trying to I don't say make friends. He's definitely not trying to be rude. He's trying to make him feel better. It's like basically saying, I've been in your shoes. I've loved and I've lost. And I can see that you're still in love and you've lost. So no one, if someone has not, like no one else can understand unless they've been through what we've been through. And he says, if she loves you as you love her, she'll always be with you, lad. Bring her to mind. She'll come. Back outside, out on the moors, they're building a wall. Tom Christie gets after Jamie about helping. So the governor has basically bibbidi-bobbidi-booed Thomas Christie and Jamie in that. He's like, okay, so yeah, I don't want more fights. I don't want this Jamie dude to like make it worse. But we've got two, quote unquote, like pseudo leaders here, right? According to Christie, because that's his practice there, a pseudo leader, at least he in his role, he doesn't do the work. And so he's trying to like say, okay, look, dude, Jamie, you and I, like, we don't do this. You don't have to do this. And Jamie's like, yeah, that's not okay. That's not it. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, okay, great. No, I'm not going to do that. And then the dudes, the Jacobites, break out in the 1745 hit, Johnny Cope. Hey, Johnny Cope, are you knocking yet? You think so dope in yet? Okay, that's really bad, but that's how it goes-ish. Really bad, but hey, Johnny Cope is how it starts. So Christie can't shut. And okay, what I'm about to say, I just realized, can be very offensive. It's no bad words, but I almost said, okay, Christie just can't shut up about the Lord. And I don't mean that. I'm a Christian. I'm not proselytizing. I'm just saying that was funny. That made me laugh. He's shouting about God and they're singing about Johnny Cope, which is, of course, the battle, you know, the 45, right, what led up to the Battle of Culloden. And the two groups charge each other, and they start a fight. Finally, the soldiers start to pay attention to them, basically prison guards, but they look, you know, they're dressed like soldiers, but they're the equivalent of prison guards. The soldiers finally pay attention to them, and just before they go over to, or as they start to try and break up a fight, someone hits the blind boy over the head with a rock. And the first time I watched, I saw and I thought, oh gosh, you know, that's bad. That's awful. That's bad. And then I, you know, continued watching. The second time, so I took it back a few seconds because I knew who was hit. Like, that wasn't a question. But I was trying to see, like, what the heck was the guy doing to get hit? Not that he deserved it, but I was like, what was going on?
He was just in the way.
He was literally trying to figure out what was going on. He was blind, like moving around in a circle. Like, that's all. He couldn't see anything. He was in the way, but he couldn't see. And that was awful, of course. And Jamie goes to him and he can tell he's dead. And when he's like, he's dead.
I mean, there was so much blood under his head, like instantaneously. There was no doubt dead was dead.
There's
was
no
dead.
Doubt dead. So once he, I'm sure they see the blood too, but once he's like, yo, this boy is dead, people finally start to have a little bit of levity. And when old Charlie, the guy who thinks he's King James, goes to see the body, he's kind of bending over it. And by this time, finally, the prison guard is over there. He's like, hey, what are you doing? Break this up. And he stands up and walks away. And Charlie had left a piece of tartan on the boy's body. And of course, the prison guards see that. That's tartan has been, the wearing of tartan, the owning of tartan, the using of tartan, whatever, has been outlawed in Scotland.
I mean, they kind of discussed it in season 3.
I'll get to that because I have a question about that. So He sees it. He says, whose is this? You know, this is illegal, blah, 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 blah. And then Jamie, being the mensch that he is, says it's his.
Of course he did.
Pause right here. Okay. So my question was, it wasn't just that it was addressed. Didn't they already do this in season 3?
I think they did with Murta, didn't they? I don't think anyone got...
There was a whipping.
What, did they whip him in season 3 for that?
There was a whipping under John.
Oh,
under John.
You're right. That's true. So they just did it again?
That's what I'm saying. Like, really? You got to take this? It happened. And I'm not saying it couldn't happen more than once.
I mean, clearly it did.
No, I mean, in the show it did. But yes. Again, my thing is, you take something that's, you know, controversial and like, ooh, meaning like, you know, oh, they have this illegal stuff. And you do it. To do it twice, it makes it a little less meaningful, Summer.
I know you're not wrong, but I think they had to do it this way because there's no other way Tom Christie would have seen his back, one. And two, he wasn't in the scene where he got whipped in season 3. So they didn't have Christie in Ardsmuir with them. So because of that, that would have been a weird non sequitur kind of a thing that he would have just known, like, just assume.
So are we to assume? Because I don't know that they've addressed this. And I don't know if Diana even did. Or maybe she has and I'm just not remembering. What we do know is that Christie was already in Ardsmuir when Jamie arrived. That's the same in the book. That is not different.
Right.
What we don't know, or what I don't remember, or what I don't know is, in the books first, was Jamie released after Christie? We don't get any dates on Christie being released, right? Do you remember?
No, I don't recall that happening. However, they all stayed until they closed the thing down.
Yes, that's correct. So, because, and everybody but Jamie was
transported.
Okay, so it doesn't go against the book. Oh, the flogging, not the flogging. The let's do this again, second verse, same as the first thing. That's not in the book. However, the fact that Christie was there before Jamie arrived, that's the same. That's the same. So if we are to, so now I think we need to go back and watch part of season 3, not because I want to see the flogging or, you know, make sure that there was a tartan, because I think there was, but I want to see in season 3, because when Jamie arrives, there was no, it was Quarry. It was not John. Well, duh, here, right? When Jamie arrives, it was Quarry. That's also not different. I'd be curious if it was the same actor. I never did check. But what I don't know is, did we get in season 3, in any of the Ardsmuir stuff, did we get any not instruction, but any information about Freemasonry. I don't think we did. I don't think no. they opened. I don't think they mentioned it.
They didn't.
Okay, so that part is fine. Number one, it fits in because it's actually in the book, and it goes further. And if you, again, not to go back to book three, but in Voyager, after they lost Ian, and he, Jamie and Claire go to France to talk with Jared about using one of his ships. Like they spill their guts and say, yeah, we need this. And Jared's starting to like talk about what ship you could use or whatever. And Jamie pulls out that he doesn't do a handshake. I mean, he might, but he starts with, we met on the level. And there's a pause.
Mm-hmm.
And Jared responds. What does Jared respond to, Sam? You know this now.
And we went on the level and we parted.
On the square.
On the square. Thank you. I was like, we parted somewhere.
You had the top of it. So basically it's not critical. Like it doesn't make or break the series. No. But it was introduced in Ars Mirror in the book. It was repeated in the same book, Voyager, when they went to meet Jared. And the reason they did that was because, I don't know that Jamie knew this because because Jamie was the one who did it. Jamie didn't know necessarily what contacts Jared all had in the Indies, but once they established they were both Masons, it opened up a whole new world of things that Jared could offer him, because then he could tell his fellow Masons, you know, in the Indies, it was much more. Like he didn't have to just say, this is my cousin. So it was started in Ars Mirror. It happened later in Voyager when they met Jared. I don't think it came up again in three, but it came up in, I think, book five. It could have been six. But yeah, it came up again. So anyway, it comes up again. Okay. And so I'm glad they brought it forward. That's awesome. But yeah, I think it won't change anything. So obviously right now, and I'm not going to stop and go watch it right now, but I'm very curious if one of our super duper listeners with a crazy good memory remembers or can confirm kind of any of these questions we have about. So we knew that Myrta was there, but that happened under the flogging from season three happened under John.
So are we then to assume then that Myrta was not part of the Ars Mirror clan when Christy was there? So he came later? That doesn't make any sense.
I'm telling you, when you make a change, when people who are supposed to die don't stay dead, you get shit. And yes, I will bleep that out. Sorry. Yes, I'm spicy about that because I still think it was a wrong move. But anyway, you opened that can of worms, Summer. Gracious. So yeah, it's not a problem, I guess, that we didn't see Christy there.
No, but we have to remember that canonically in the show, Myrta was in Ars Mirror. And everyone that was in Ars Mirror before Jamie was there from the end of Culloden.
I understand that. But what I'm saying is when you do what you did, like they should have brought Myrta back for this.
Correct. For continuity, yeah.
So that was an error. Straight up error. That wasn't, I'm not saying that they didn't try. Maybe they had it and they couldn't get a hold of them. I don't know. But I'm saying continuity wise, this is not like I put a paper cup under my, this is not a, what's that show? Or a water bottle. The big show on HBO, that the dragon show.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah. This is not Game of Thrones where you see actually in the published show, you see people sitting on beautiful, you know, in their huge, beautiful costumes sitting on these big, like throne-like chairs. And then in one clip or in one scene, you see before they caught it and then I guess zipped it out, you know, like painted it out. There was like either a paper cup or a plastic water bottle underneath one of the chairs. This is worse than that because that's a human error, meaning it happened last minute. No one caught it. Oopsie. We can paint it out. You can't paint back in Myrta. You can't. So that actually is maybe not an error.
No, I don't think it was an error. I just think that, I don't think they accidentally didn't put Myrta in the jail. They purposefully didn't put him in there.
It was an error, not a mistake. Does that make sense? They should have had him. That's why
it was
an
a choice.
Error. It was a choice. That was a wrong choice because this is not about adaptation. This is now of, okay, you chose to go a different direction. Fine. We're going with you. We enjoyed Myrta for another two, three seasons, but you can't even respect because I don't want to be that harsh. You can't even keep up with your own changes. That's the problem. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
There's the whole thing with the tartan. Okay, second verse, same as the first. That's a bit much, but whatever. Okay. But the fact that you went out of your way to choose to have Myrta live, and then you on purpose, because like you said, it was not a mistake that they chose not to have him there. They did that on purpose, right? For whatever reason. For whatever reason, they chose not to have him there. I believe that was an error, not an oopsie error. That was a, I guess error is the wrong word. I don't think it was a good choice. Is that better to say?
Yeah.
Because number one, they've introduced a huge continuity error, number one. Number two, they're not faithful to their own adaptation. They're not faithful to their own choices that they made. They wanted to keep Murtaugh alive against everyone's, Diana's, you know, not her advice, but she obviously thought it was like, oh, that wasn't the greatest, but, and she still says that. And that's fine. It's a choice. It's gone. That ship has sailed. Fair enough. But if you're going to have the balls to do that, like, I don't see not keeping up, like believe in your choice, maintain your choice. Does that make sense?
I'm sure there's a reason.
Perhaps.
I don't know what it is. The reason could be he wasn't available. Who knows?
That is true. That is true.
The reason could also be no one's going to notice. They're going to be so busy looking at Sam Heughan.
Except for us people who have read too much and watched too much.
Yeah, we're always a problem.
So we had not even gotten to the stinking freaking episode. Okay, that was a pause. Let's unpause. So basically, Jamie takes credit. Mm-hmm. He takes the blame for the tartan. And so he's flogged. And I wrote, he's flogged yet again. Actually, no, he's flogged for the first time in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, Stars, you mess us up in the head. So Tom is having a cow over this. He's not jealous. It's nothing like that. He's like, he certainly wasn't going to be the one to go put his first foot forward. He's upset that someone like Jamie, who is in his eyes, a traitor. I mean, he's a traitor too, according to the government, but he's not as worthy as Jamie. Most of all, because he's a Catholic and he saw all those other scars he had. And so he must've gotten into trouble and done some really bad things before. So he's like, he's a lower human potentially, right? Or not as good as him. And he's a papist. And yet this horrible human / papist, this idol, I can't talk, this idol worshiper, right? This Mary worshiper, whatever you want to call him, in Tom's eyes, stepped forward and is taking the punishment of an old man. Because that beating, the flogging could have killed him, right? Technically, anyone who gets flogged develop an infection and die. So it could kill anyone. But even just the flogging itself, not any secondary infection. So Tom's not having it. He's not reacting well. He doesn't like this because Jamie, it was never his intention. But he already doesn't like Jamie for all the reasons I said. But now he holds this against Jamie because Jamie has shown him up. Not because Jamie tried to. This has nothing to do with Tom. This is everything to do with Jamie and what kind of person he is. But Tom is hating this. So in the middle of the flogging, Jamie spaces out and goes into Claretown. And when he comes out of Claretown, it's done. So that was well-timed, Jamie. Well-timed Claire. At the end of it, Christy says, that wasn't justice. And Jamie says, was it not? So he's like having his like he can't even give a nice word to Jamie. Like, man, what you did, like, that's hella dope.
Well, because he doesn't think it's dope. He believes that he is so religious that he is firmly in the eye for an eye category. And that was not an eye for an eye. That was him taking the punishment for someone else.
Exactly. And that's Christ-like. And he realizes that, which we find out later. He does realize it, but it so disrupts him. It does not fit with someone who's an idolatrous papist, Summer. You know what I'm saying? And he's vying.
Why are you saying my name like that?
Summer. Summer. So what I wrote was, dude, go play with your wiener, Tom. Go away.
God, it's all about the wiener. This whole episode.
I have never mentioned wiener till now.
It is a wang competition.
Oh, that. Sorry. I played right into that. Oh, Lord. So the next day, Jamie pulls ahead as leader and says, nope.
Yeah, he's like, we're not going today.
Nope. Exactly. I can't talk. Exactly. Young blind James is dead. We'll be taking a day off, thanks. And with that, he's established himself as the leader. Back with the gov, he says that Tom is a, quote, more decent sort. Governor says this. But Jamie is, you know, he stands up for the men. And so Tom had convinced some people, meaning some of the Catholics, to change their beliefs. Now, they don't go into what that is. Does that mean they become Protestant? They no longer believe in in Catholicism, I don't know. But he had convinced some of them, most likely to accept Protestantism. And that is shared with Jamie. And Jamie says, we need foods, medication, and peace. And then he says, by the way, I saw your finger play.
Ew, that sounds so nasty. What's wrong with you?
Make me a Freemason and we'll work on things. He says, the men will listen to me. The men will listen to me. So do this and I can help alleviate some of the issues. Later, Potater. Jamie puts James Locket or whatever it was, pin. I don't know what it was. I never got a good enough look at it. I don't think it was a chain, so whatever it was. He puts his thingamajig on at his cairn. There's a little bit of like,
I
some
feel like
of...
you could find a way to find nonsense words that don't get used all the time for penises.
Thingamajig? Summer. So he places the locket, whatever it is, with, I think it has some heather in it. It's like a little, some sprigs of some kind of flowery plant. And he tells the people, we're done. No more fighting. Papists and Protestants, we are all Scots. This prison is now a lodge. We will work together. Politics and religion, or talk of such, is forbidden. He's like, who is going to join me? And the dudes start
to line
up.
Who wants to learn the secret handshake?
Exactly. The dudes start to line up. Now, they don't get through it, but we have to assume that they all pretty much all become Masons. But they're interrupted by a soldier who calls Jamie in for lunchtime with the governor.
Sorry, guys. Jamie has to go home for lunch.
Now, Tom, they don't show us what happens at the lunch, but Tom does not take this too well. And that's where we end the cold open.
That was the longest cold open.
We're actually not even done with the cold open yet.
Oh, because he shows up on the ridge.
We have a hint of him, yes. So then the channel changes. Then the screen shows us Scotland as North Carolina, or North Carolina as Scotland.
The ridge.
North Carolina, 1773. Thomas Christie is coming up the ridge walking. And we see him walking up to their ridge. And then we get the actual opening song and lyrics and everything. Now, regarding the new song, what do you think? I know it came out before. We didn't have a chance to do a chat about the like a scene by scene, whatever. And I have not broken it down scene by scene. I'm only asking about the music part. What do you think about them splitting it up with the dude and Rhea?
I think it sounds like exactly what it is: two people singing different songs at the same time.
Okay, then that was quick and easy.
They don't sound like they're singing the same song together. It sounds like they're singing like separately. Like they don't. You know what I mean? Like they were clearly recorded separately, but they don't really sound like they mesh the two qualities of the voices. But it's a pretty song no matter what. And I didn't like that they changed it to Lad. Since they changed it to Lass for the show, why are we changing it to Lad for this?
Since they brought Murtaugh back, why didn't they have him here? We can ask a lot of questions. At the end of the whole music-y intro bit, I love that they end with, well, we can't say, we don't know. And I don't even mean we can't say because of spoiler. We can't say because we don't know. I was about to say, I love the end of the intro where it's Jamie and Claire staring. It's like that key art, right? Where they're staring back at the camera or staring back toward the camera. And there's snow falling. But is it? So then we get a title card, a moving title card, because obviously it's not a still. Or it's never a still. It usually can be a quote-unquote still image that they then either do like a, you know, back up on or close in on. But there's always usually some kind of movement. But this was hella moving.
It was ether.
Yes. So Claire is making ether, and or she will be soon. We see the title is Echoes, and we see all the distillation to prepare the ether, and it comes on and ends just as Grioger is singing in the background. Now we go and start the episode proper. And, oh my god, tears in my eyes because Summer's, the one theme Summer can hear, plays. And that, I don't know why, that theme and Roger and Bree's theme always gets me teary. I can't help it. Summer, what's the...
The Ridge theme?
Yes! It's just...
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
What I like about it is it was the... Oh, okay. Okay. Enough. That's too much.
I had to do the whole thing.
No, you didn't.
I'm done.
You really,
I'm
really
done
didn't.
Now.
But it was the Ridge theme accompanied by all these pastoral images. Like it just, it's like evoking, they feel like they're feeling a little safe now. It's just day-to-day life. There's nothing, you know, while there are things that are kind of hovering in the horizon, there's no direct threats currently. We're kind of in a little safe bubble, but that's all about to change.
As we start the episode, Claire is unconscious in her surgery bed. Jamie comes in and their love theme starts. And he's like, "What are you doing, Claire?" "Oh, nothing. Just testing out this ether." Now, Jamie is not too keen. Not that she's testing it out, although he probably has ideas on that too, about the ether. She's like, "Isn't this great? People can be surgeried on, operated on, and they won't feel pain." And he's like, "Well, I mean, I get it, but I want to be around. I want to be conscious. I don't want to lose anything." And that is a very key thing, or common thing, consistent thing with Jamie throughout all the stinking stankin' books so far. Even book 9 is a stinking stankin' thing. Major McDonald, he says, has asked him to be an Indian agent. And he's like, "I'm not so into that." And then she's all, "Okay, I need to go check on Marsali. We don't know exactly why yet. I don't think they mention it, but yeah, she's about to pop. We know this. Like, well, we don't know.
She was
this.
Pregnant last season, and it's only this season. There's not, unlike for us, it's been 2 years. For them, it's been like a week.
Our Lord. Yeah. So she goes, that's true, because face Claire. Claire still had like some bruising and some very light, but she still had marks on her face. She wasn't completely healed, but she looked great, but she had a little bit of like maybe a little. Tiny scab somewhere, but it was very light. But she just, you could tell she still had a little bit of physical
bruising, little bruising,
physical stuff on her face. And so, yeah, they're going to go check on Marsali, and he goes with her. So they have a little chat as they go in the buggy or in the cart, whatever. Carriage.
She's like, "Are you going to come with me on all of my home visits now?"
He's like, "Do yes. I need?" He says basically yes. And so they're not that we need to be clued in, because we already know this, but yeah, Claire's PTSD is going to be a big part of the season. She's definitely still experiencing it. As I said, she still got bruises, so this is very recent. Then we go to Roger and Bree Chase at home, and the reality of pending war is hitting them both. So these are two of our three-ish 20th century people who know things. And the reality of this thing and this time that's coming is hitting them, and they have a little conversation about that. Then Claire and Jamie arrive at Marsley's, and we see that Jamie has offered to take Germain and the two girls for a little ride while Claire checks in on her. And we find out that Fergus is at the still working. And
he's still Marsley, at the still.
Yes. Now Marsley also has bruises on her wrists, and they're a lot darker than Claire's. And she blames it as on her clumsiness. And Claire's all, "Okay, just be careful."
"I clumsily grabbed this with my hand. Grabbed myself with my hand."
Or it looks like I thought you were about to say, "I grabbed it with my wrist. Girl, that's just not how it works."
No, but like, I'm just so clumsy. I fell into a door. You know what I mean? It's like.
And I had my arm at this angle. Yeah. Back to the big house. Where we saw him start to walk, he has arrived. And there is music playing under him, under his arrival. And I'm guessing that's his theme. I don't know that we heard it when we first saw him, when it said North Carolina 1773. We may have. I just didn't pay attention, I guess. But I definitely noticed music here as he's walking up to the house. He knocks. Roger greets him, tells him the Frasers are out, but do come in and have some snacks. And he's like, "Can I help you?" And Tom's like, "Yeah, I'm here about the land. I was in Ardsmuir with your father-in-law." And in comes Bree. Tom says he came with his own son and daughter. And also, oh yeah, and some of those fisher folk. This is another interesting change from the books. Do all those things happen? Absolutely. Tom comes with his children. That is legit. They come at the end of book 5. End of book 5. And the fisher folk, I think, come in the middle. I think they come in book 5. But the fisher folk, or actually the fisher folk may even come in books, but in book 6, but they do not come together. Tom comes in the end of book 5, and then we learn more of him in the beginning of book 6. The fisher folk arrive in the colonies, and they send word, I forget how, but basically there's a chat, and Jamie's like, "Roger, I'd like you to go," because he sends him because he's a Presbyterian, and these fisher folk are Protestants. So they think Roger is like the best. He's the best one to go. So I think Roger goes. I think Hiram Crombie goes, or unless Hiram Crombie is among them. I don't remember. But in the book, Archbug goes. Now, he's Catholic in the book. However, he also is stumm in the book. Like, he hardly ever talks. So his knowledge and his ability to work with people and work with just everything, he's kind of Jamie's right-hand man outside of Roger, right? He's his factor. We don't get that at all in the show. But in the books, he has a very important role. So in the books, it happens much, much separated from Christy. But hey, it works. It actually works. Christy is extremely Protestant. So it makes sense that these people who are extremely Protestant would also come with him. One other difference is that in the books, Amy, I can't speak, but I think she is. I think Amy McCollum in the books was, she may or not have been of the Fisher folk. I don't remember, but I believe she was Catholic. That could be wrong. But anywho, in the show, she's here, and I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but she's part of the Fisher folk here. Okay. So Roger's all, come in, have some snacks. He's like, I'm here for some land. I used to know your father-in-law. We were in Ardsmuir together. Okay, now snacks. So what's the background? After Ardsmuir, we get a little bit of an info dump here. Tom was indentured as a schoolmaster. And then once his employer died, he was freed. He's like, do you guys have a school? No. How about a church? Nope. So Tom is all, hail to the no. I am, because he was thinking, or he didn't know. He just, I guess, assumed. Roger did. Tom's all, hail to the no. I'm not Catholic. And right then, Jamie and Claire come home. And Jamie, the look on Jamie's face, like, pretty much stays the same way the rest of the episode, right?
Right.
He looks surprised by Tom. Of course, Jamie welcomes him. He's the one who took a flogging for an old man. Of course, he's not going to turn someone away who's in need, even though it is his. Enemy-ish. Enemy's a harsh term, but definitely on different sides of the religion part. But, of course, Jamie welcomes him to settle. Though Jamie looks awfully, like, cautious. And he's like, intrigued. Like, what the hell? You hate me. Why are you here?
Right? He's like, well, excuse me while I go and piss on everything.
Oh, to keep the goats out?
These are all mine.
Oh, that. You know what I mean? Own them, yes. And then he introduces Claire.
Yes.
Next scene. The bugs and others are packing up supplies for the noobs. They're going to take them down to the Fisher folk and welcome them. Claire tells Bree about the ether. And Claire continues to deny that anything is wrong. She's like, Mom, are you okay? I was there once. Slightly different, but I have been, you know, I have been assaulted. So I know that there are issues here. There are things here. It's not that quick. She's like, I'm fine. You don't worry about me. And Bree says, quote, there was a time that I would say I'm fine too. And Claire completely ignores her. Doesn't say anything to that.
I feel like Jamie now wishes that his ad had said, Ardsmuir people accept Tom Christie.
Yeah.
You know who you are.
Except for that one dude.
I know. Everyone except that one guy.
Oh, man. Oh, Lord. So any plans? Bree says she's afraid of using her knowledge. She asks her, like, what do you have on tap? What are your projects? What are you interested in? What do you want to do? And Bree has, she's very, you know, capable. She's very smart. But she's afraid of using her knowledge, her abilities mostly, to create something that some people might be afraid of or see that and use it against her. Like, you know, call her a witch, call her this. You know, it could cause trouble with what she's saying. And especially after what her mom just went through because of that ding dong book. So when they take all the stuff down to the Fisher folk, we meet Alan and Malva for the first time. And Jamie's all, I don't know where this came from, so I better not. I wrote, Jamie's all, old friend, eh? So I'll include it. Someone introduces them or him as an old friend. So maybe, I think as Alan says something like, it's so nice to meet you. You know, my father's old friend, something like that. And Jamie's face, again, makes the same thing. Like, the heck?
His face was making the air quotes. His hand wasn't.
The whole chapter. Yes. And Malva takes Claire away to see to anyone who needs seen to, like with, you know, with any ills or any anyone who needs help. Tom says he is genuinely impressed with the land. And Jamie's like, well, you know, yeah, it is beautiful. That's not my doing. That's God's doing. But he's like, yeah, I'm fortunate. That's it. So Tom, he's not gagging for it, but Tom is praising Jamie, but with the underline of, look what you have. I bet you think you're hot shit, is basically what he's saying, right? And Jamie's like, nah. Jamie does not take the bait. He's like, nah, I mean, I'm fortunate. We're fortunate. Yes. The land is beautiful. Absolutely. We're very fortunate to have this.
It's like later in the episode when the British officer's there and they're talking about the Indian stuff. And he's like, you know, you've come a long way since Ardsmuir.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, he always has to like shove him down just a peg.
There's always a dig. There's always a dig. There, absolutely.
It is. It's just everywhere.
Oh, I didn't say, I said dig.
Oh, I thought you said dicks. Yes, they were measuring dicks.
That too. Okay. So real talk with Claire, between Claire and Jamie. After everything you said about Tom, what the heck?
Uh-huh.
Right? And Jamie's like, she's like, after everything you said, why is he here? What is he doing? And he's like, I couldn't very well single him out, could I? As Summer said, anyone from Ardmore except that one dude.
Right. Please.
And Jamie tells her how he saw her there, Claire, with him at Ardsmuir. And he helped her get through that time. And he says, sometimes I think you're an angel. And boom, we get the first notes of their love theme.
Did they flashback, or are we just, does he just references the flogging earlier that we saw in the cold open and references it to her? They don't show it again, right?
No, they don't show it.
Yeah, because when they showed it the first time, I was like, Jesus, is this going to be like the new porn? Are we doing flog porn now?
Good Lord, Summer.
Well, because she comes walking out of the distance looking all pretty and sexy, and he's getting flogged with his stern face. Like, flog me, Daddy.
Oh, Lord. Sometimes I think you're an angel. And then the first notes of their love theme start. So then the angel mounts him and starts to undress. I mean, I wouldn't mind a mangel.
He wouldn't mind a what?
A mangel.
Mm-mm.
An angel, a mangel.
No, I understood it.
Just wasn't getting anything. You're funny. You're mean, but you're funny. She's like, nope, I'm not even going to address it except for the uh-uh. Next day. So they have Whoopi. The next day, Mava, or so, some next day, some day, a day or three or two later.
Sometime Mava, in the future.
Exactly. Some morning thereafter. Mava is visiting the surgery. And she, as she's coming in, she's hearing, because Claire hears someone come in and she assumes it's Bree. So she's talking about this phosphorus that she has. And she comes in and she's like, oh, you, it's you, Mava. And Mava's like, oh, I heard you say phosphorus. Let me tell you everything I know related to that word. What is it for? And Claire says, it's an ingredient. And she doesn't go any further because she knows. I can't say she knows better. She doesn't know better.
She
yet.
Starts
she knows
breaking
better.
Down the terms of the word.
That's breaking Mava, down the. Though.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Mava breaks it down. Claire's just like, oh, it's an ingredient. And Mava's like,
well, Claire's
let me
spill
like,
we're just trying
you.
To move past it, brush it under.
Exactly. And then brush it away. She goes, exactly. And so Mava's going on, and Claire's like, oh, so you have, you know, did your father teach you? Blah, 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 blah. And did your father teach you science? And she's like, no, just theology and probably some language or whatever. But no, he didn't like that. And then she goes right back to it. Claire was unsuccessful in trying to take her away from it. She goes, Lucifer is to hell as fire is to dot, dot, dot. And then she goes, are you going to light it? Let's get to the point. The point is, she's come to ask for a loaf of bread for the
She's like, wait, why are you here?
Exactly. And Mrs. Bug overhears this and says, hey, little cutie, if you want bread, I've got some newly baked. Come over here. Get out of there. Leave the missus alone.
I'll tell you what, if that had been like a shopping mall. And I was helping somebody and I was like, you want some bread? And then somebody from across the room in a different stall says, hey, you want bread? I got bread over here. I'd been like, dude, stop stealing my customers.
No, she wanted her to be stolen.
Oh, she sure did.
So Major McDonald is visiting and Jamie has said no. And actually, he was visiting. He's on his way out of the tune, but it's not a tune. It's a ridge. He's trying to convince him. He's like, look. Please, basically pretty please with sugar on top. And he says, look, the new governor, Josiah Martin, doesn't owe you anything like the previous one. The previous one, which was...
He hasn't made any promises to you.
Unlike the last one. Like, you got, exactly. I don't think he... I don't think he was trying to, I don't think he was, maybe I'm wrong. I don't think he was trying to threaten him. I don't even know if he knows about the land grant. He knows that it exists. Well, he must know, because if he knows it exists, he knows Jamie's Catholic. Like, he, there's no hiding that, right? They don't hide it. They don't advertise it, but they don't hide it. So he, it must be like, you know, just like agree to be silent on that. So maybe he was giving like a nudge to that, right? Like, this new one, you might not want to have him. Not that you saying no would be, you know, he's not going to come kill you, but you may, it's not about keeping on him. It's not about not getting on your bad side. Although that too, you may want to especially have him on your good side. You may want to go out of your way to do something that makes him happy. You want to keep him happy because this dude owes you nada. Meaning he hasn't, he's not going to look out for you. Not that the previous one owed him anything.
Well, he's been deferring his taxes. He's like, you've had this great deal, but there's no guarantee the new governor is going to uphold them.
Correct. Now, what's not mentioned, and maybe he doesn't know, maybe he only thinks, quote, or knows about the taxes thing, but what he doesn't mention, but what he might know and also might be like, wink, wink, nodding about, is the fact that I know you got a land grant and I know you're Catholic. Even though he doesn't say anything, that could be underlying this whole thing, right? Who knows? It's another thing, but the taxes are a big thing. He's like, look, I got to go. I got to go to Brownsville and talk about this doo-wop committee of safety thing. Find out about it. And look, I have to come back this way on my way back to civilization. So I'll come by and I'll check with you again. That kind of makes Jamie go, her, what? I mean, he starts to think about it. He starts to think. Tom breaks bread.
Breaks bread? I don't remember that scene.
It was an outtake that you missed. Tom breaks bread for his people and leads a service or a prayer. Jamie, Roger, and Bree arrive around this time down where they're living, and they join them. And the look on, the first time, I didn't notice anything of it, and maybe there's nothing there. Maybe there's nothing meant by it. But if you watch this, and watch the look on Bree's face. Like, I can't even describe it. It's funny. It's like, she's not making fun. She's not taking it seriously. I can't describe it. It's just like, I don't even know. It's funny.
I think she recognizes all the swinging.
Maybe so. Yes. And she's like, oh.
I'm like, seriously, because the only reason they're there is because Malva wanted bread for the service. So they're like, oh, he's having a service. Let's go find out. Like, it's high school.
Oh, got it. So you think this time it's Jamie.
Yeah. So they're like, he's having this private service with his people. And he hears him kind of, let's show these people what we can do. And then he shows up and he's like, well, hey, we're these people. So you think we can't do that? Well, can you do this? Like, it's just measuring dicks all over again.
So no one there had built a cabin before. So Jamie tells them.
he's like, how are you going to build a church when none of you has even built a cabin?
So Jamie's like, I'll help you. He's not trying to take over, but he is there to help. He's there to help, mm-hmm. teach them different things. But it very conveniently falls in line with his portion of the dick swinging.
Mm-hmm. Seriously, it's
goodness,
all...
it's ours, mirror all over
one-upping.
Again.
One-upping. It's just one-upping.
But thankfully, they're free. There's no one's in prison here. So they do actually work well together, all the people. But also Jamie and, if they can get over their dicks, Jamie and Tom work really well together because they both want their people too. They're both working for the good of the people. Marcelly is out, but she shouldn't be. And we meet Amy. Amy McCollum is a widow with two kids. So it's a different storyline. Like I said, she did not, I don't think she may or may not have arrived with the
Fisher folk,
but I'm sure as heck, because again, Fisher folk were not with Christy. So that's slightly different, but whatever, who cares? And she was a widow in the book, but she did not arrive a widow. She arrives with her husband and two kids, and her husband dies after they arrive. That's the difference. It's not a big deal because her husband's not in much of the book. So that's whatever. That's fine. It works well. It goes well with it. It's very convenient. So Amy comes up. She sees a very heavily pregnant Marcelly and says, hey, are you a widow too? And she's like, oh, no. My husband's off doing the drinking at the still for us all. Mm-hmm. And Bree says, quote, wish there was something we could do, unquote. And I wrote, you could lend him your husband, girl.
No.
Well, it begins here. This is not a, by the end of the episode, you'll know what I'm talking about. So there is let's get to it music. Fergus ends up coming in, stumbling in, drunk as a skunk. And around the corner in the woods, a little bit later, Ian and Alan Christie are going hunting, each with a different weapon. Alan shows off his gun and the powder horn he has. And of course, Ian has his bow and arrow. And he's like, oh, did your father teach you to shoot? And Alan's like, no, my dad didn't teach me to shoot. And we don't find out who did, because just at this time, up comes a committee of safety starring Richard Brown. Alan accidentally, now, before we get here, they are hunting, as I said, and Ian has shot and Alan has shot. So there has been noise that has been attracted these people, these men.
And then Ian's not dressed like.
Up comes the committee of safety starring Richard Brown. Before they get there, not only had they heard the fire, the gunfire, he was showing, as I said, he was showing off his powder horn to Ian. And as the committee of safety comes up, he hasn't hidden it. Like it's still there for people to see. And some guy in the committee goes up to Brown and mumbles something. And then they take off. And I went, huh, that's convenient. This might come back later. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see. But yes, in that whole conversation, it was very, very confrontational, as Brown always is. I guess you get more dick swinging in there. Whatever Brown is, there's always dick swinging. Whoever, right? He's like the biggest dick swinger there.
Here's timeline. For me, timeline. Are we to assume that the Christies have come across the Committee for Safety on their journey to the ridge already?
No, not the Committee of Safety. The one dude who's part of the Committee of Safety knew of something.
He saw that it was the powder corn. So I'm just like, it had to have been one of theirs for them to have said it.
The guy who mumbled to Christie, it was either his or he knew whose it was. Absolutely. But where Alan was when he stole it, we don't know. That was never really explained. Back at the big house, Tom arrives. He's injured himself cutting rushes, and he's come to Claire for help. And we find out he's got a fear of blood because he faints when she kind of opens up his hand to get to the cleaning.
That was such a faint. You know what I mean?
He's really good.
But he was sitting, so it wasn't like he was going to fall to the ground, but it was just like his whole body just kind of went up and then down and was sliding towards the floor. But it was, I don't know, it was like fainting from just the top of your body, fainting just from your chest. You can't faint with your whole body. You only have, here's your camera work. This is your frame. You have to have your whole faint happen in this frame.
Well, Jamie tries to get him to take, after that, he comes to and quickly, and he's in the chair, and Jamie tries to get him to take a little alcohol for the pain. And he's like, look, I'll bring you some of this. Isn't this, like, out of all the situations where alcohol might be called for, wouldn't you agree this is one of them? And he's like, I'll look at the Bible. I can read some passages to you. And he's like, some of us Catholics can read too.
I know how to make him stop fainting. We're going to measure our d***s again right in front of my wife.
Oh my goodness. Oh, the best place to do so. So the anti-papist banter is historical. No, hysterical. I mean, maybe both. I don't know. Jamie stands over him as she works. She makes an ointment. After she's all done, she makes an ointment and says, hey, I'll make this ready. I'll have Malva come get it, and she will see to your wound. I'll check it and when I see you at the hog roast tomorrow.
But she's kind of a skeezy businessman in this scene.
Claire?
Yeah, because he came to her with his cut on his hand, and she's trying to upsell him for another hand surgery.
Oh.
He's like, no, I don't want more wounds. I just came for this thing.
So in examining him, she notices his other hand. Now, she does not tell us the name of it, and that's fine. But it is something that she believes is Dupuytren's contracture. And she's like, I can fix it. I can fix it. And he's like, no, thanks.
Nope.
And then Tom, they're talking about like how it will heal, and he's going to have a scar. And he says, well, at least it's going to be an honorable scar. As he leaves,
this guy,
he says, at least it'll be an honorable scar. And Jamie had stayed there. So, so that he wouldn't move while she was, you know, doctoring him, and so that he wouldn't faint, because Tom is that stubborn. And probably, yes, I burped, sorry. Because Tom is that stubborn.
Yeah, and nothing keeps a man from fainting more than a competition. It's the truth. The whole thing is just measuring.
Now, there's all this food being set out. Is this for the hog roast? I mean, it must be. It's the next night, right? This is at the same night or same day. Jamie and McDonald. So McDonald's back. He's back from Brownsville. McDonald, they have a dram, and they chat about the Committee of Safety. And he says, look, you're not interested. I've had a chat with Richard Brown. I'm going to offer it to him. And Jamie's like, fine, I'll do it. Fine, I'll do it. So Jamie will be the Indian agent for the game. The Christies arrive for the, quote, festivities. And Alan tells Jamie he lives like a king. Like, meaning they're on the ridge in that house. Which, from where they have been, I'm sure it looks like it.
So he's like, you've got lots of money, sir.
Exactly. And it's not showcased, I would say. But if you watch the major, every time something happens, he's like, and let's have a drink. He literally says, oh, we could go for some sherry, or oh, we could go, mm-hmm. go for that. He and Fergus need to get together in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, but he said, I never turned down a whiskey or something like that. I never turned down a drink. He's like, and I'm going to make you serve them to me, even if you didn't want to.
So Fergus and Marsley arrive, and he asks, because she takes Fergus into the room where I think it's a side room.
She's in the kitchen.
Yeah. And he's like, why are we here? And she's trying to basically feed him.
She's trying to sober him up.
Bread to soak up his liquor. And so he's starting to get the picture that, she's embarrassed by me. This is something that she doesn't like me, what I'm doing. And Lizzie comes in and says, please. Lizzie comes in to help move the food. It's in the room with the food. So I guess it's kitchen. So it's a big table with all the food. So Lizzie comes in and says that she's like, please, I need some help with this. And the Beardsleys come in and she's like, oh, this one or that one? And she's like, oh, I'd like both boys to help me.
Mm-hmm.
Please. No, I'm not greedy. And
oh my God, if this is just the Easter egg to it and they never actually give us the storyline, I'm going to pitch a fit. Like, if it's just innuendos the whole season about Lizzie liking both of the Beardsleys and they don't actually commit.
Here's the thing, since you said that. So I was rewatching our red carpet interview with Kate O'Ryan, okay? That Sarah did. And she asks her, are you going to fall in love? Or are you going to get your man basically this season? And she's like, well, I can't tell you, obviously. But she doesn't tell the answer, obviously. But in a roundabout way, from what she says, and I can't remember her exact words, so I'm sorry, I'm not very helpful right now. But from what she says, before you just said a word, I had a feeling that maybe the way they were going to handle it was not. Well, we already know it's different because she doesn't have malaria. Okay, that's different. How it happens in the book is completely, I mean, it's still messed up, but it's kind of understandable given who the boys were and kind of given how Lizzie was and the situation, right? Since none of them have, I mean, the boys are kind of the way they were, but the boys are in a lot better physical situation in the show than they were in the book. A lot better, except Kezia's still deaf. I had a feeling. It was the first time I had a thought. I knew they were not doing the exact same thing. That was not news to me, but I had a thought. I was like, oh, what if they're not going to do the love in the same way?
What if it's like that scene in Austin Powers when they tease there's going to be nudity the whole time, but they keep holding up giant pieces of fruit? You know what I'm talking about? Like just the misdirection?
I have thoughts about that, but we can't say too much because we don't want to spoil, but I agree with you 100%.
Well, I'm just saying, what if it's just misdirection and little innuendos?
If it's only misdirection the entire season, I'll be very disappointed.
Okay.
So Amy McCollum is also there with her two kiddos. Alan tries to help with her son, who is not having it. He's like, he is not happy there. And so Roger ends up going to help. And he tells him, you know what? You can help us build the cabin.
Yeah, but not before Alan tries to help by showing him off that, to have another moment to show that he has that powder horn. But he's like, I don't want to hunt. I'm a fisher folk. We fish.
I'm a fisher folk.
Keep your guns away from me.
uh-oh, there's riders coming up the ridge as they come. It's the Committee of Safety. And we get more uh-oh music. Claire is outside with her forever basket. And by that, I mean she has a basket in almost any scene outdoors this episode. So many baskets. So she's out there without her forever basket. And as soon as the uh-oh music comes on and the riders come up the ridge, she very gracefully turns around and goes into the house, and we never see her the rest of the episode. She's done. Or at least this scene. So Richard Brown wants, he says, there's some dark-haired boy who was hunting with Ian. He's a thief. He stole someone's powder horn. We've come to arrest him.
Like, when did that happen? That's like my whole point. Like, that's all we're going to get? We're not going to get
We're not going to get how it happened. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So Tom Christie comes in and grabs his son for an aside. Where did you get it? Do you want to end up like your mother? No, he says. Good, because she's burning in the fires of hell. That's Sweet another Jesus. Aside. I know. It's very rough, this talk.
Jeez, and, Dad.
Tom Christie says, we will punish him. Please don't take him. And Brown says, okay then, 10 lashes. Jamie steps in and says, this is my land. We'll make sure that he's punished. And then Brown says, funny how it's gunpowder he stole. You're not by chance harboring one of those rebels, are you? And Tom says, nope, we are loyal to our king. Well, that'll last for maybe part of the season. We don't know. So Jamie will do the honors. My land, my means. After Brown was totally going to go whip him. So Jamie's like, nope. So Jamie starts to undress. I mean, takes off his belt. And he's the one who gives the 10 lashes to Alan. After he's done, more flogging porn. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. But the whole thing about with Jamie, it's like he's trying to help Christy. And Christy's like, no, if he did it, beat him. Don't get him out of this. And he's like, I won't let you help me. Because he could have maneuvered the whole punishment away if Christy hadn't stood in his way.
Exactly.
Which goes back to his whole eye for an eye. That's not justice from the beginning of the
episode. Exactly. That's true. Now, something else, again, we haven't seen all the episodes, so we don't know. In the book, there's something kind of like this. Let me just say one thing. Maybe plant a seed. It may not grow. It may not ever show up ever again, but I'll plant a little seed. What did we just describe? Brown comes with a committee of safety with the intent, because some harm was done by someone there, and the intent is to arrest him. When you arrest someone, who knows what they're going to do to him along the way, but usually it's going to take custody of him to take him to get justice, right? Something like that.
If they make it.
Forget the names and the people involved, other than Brown. The Committee of Safety, headed by Richard Brown, comes to the big house to arrest someone who has done harm or some crime. Mm-hmm. Just remember that scenario. That's it. No details.
It's okay. You're just probably going to be seeing it like deja vu. It's like the cat in the Matrix.
I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm planting that in there. Don't forget that. Just keep that general thing in your brain.
Let's also remember that the other thing about the Browns, it's not just that that dude's brother, you know, kidnapped and tried to kill Claire last season. We're not even just talking about that. Just in the beginning of this episode, he was saying to Ian, he was saying, you know, the Indians have been burning down cabins. So he's already predisposed towards or prejudiced against the Indians and predisposed to kill them. So there's no reason he should have anything to do with the Indians. And I think that it was a protective thing on Jamie's part, as well as anyone but him. Like, I don't trust that guy with anything, but I definitely don't want him.
Exactly. Exactly. So he says, now take your men off my land, and they go. So much for a celebration. As he tells McDonald that he'll be the Indian agent. I thought this was the weirdest, oddest timing for this. If you listen to it, as he tells McDonald that he'll be the Indian agent, the love theme starts. I was like, what? Yeah, it's true. So Jamie goes after Tom. In Ardsmuir, we lived under someone else's command. If you're to stay, my word is law. Basically, more dick swinging.
Exactly. He's like, this is going to be the last time that we pull out this ruler tonight.
We don't get to see any festivities because that's it. Because we go to Marsley and Fergus. back at their house. So festivities are over with. Either that or they leave early. Who knows? So she brings him some water and he adds alcohol to it because you can't drink.
No,
alcohol,
she like made coffee. She made him a pot of, like it was a pot of coffee.
He does it while looking at her to get a reaction out of her. Like, this is not just, I'm having trouble with alcohol and everything I drink needs to have it. No, he's totally doing it despite her. He does it to her as, it's like a cat looking at you in the eyeball as he knocks the glass off the shelf. Okay. That's what it was. It's a dick. More, I don't know if I call it more dick swinging, but more dicks.
It's all the dicks. This is all the dicks.
All the dicks this episode. Oh my goodness. Yeah. They disagree about his alcohol consumption.
Yeah.
These are family problems. They are very off. These are family problems. They have family problems. Will we end up getting, okay. I'm not saying there hasn't been one, because again, I don't hear everything. Especially if it's new, I don't hear everything. But I wonder if we're going to get finally a Marcelly and Fergus theme. So maybe we'll have to see. And then he leaves. And in the final scene of the episode, we're back at the big house. Claire is having a nightmare of her abduction. And not only is it like scenes, like visual scenes, right? Like a flash and a flash and a flash. It goes flash to flash to flash, scene to scene to scene. It's also the sounds and the voices she hears. And I was kind of surprised. I shouldn't be surprised. Well, what it told me was that it was not just about, I don't believe, it was not just about her recent abduction. If you listen closely, and I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm not because of this one voice. If you listen, I would have to go back and kind of like go through it slowly, like pause it to make sure I'm not wrong. But because I heard this one voice, I'm pretty sure I'm right. Galus was in her dream. So if there's Galus's voice, because there's something like, they say I'm a witch, Claire, something like that. If you have that in your nightmare, your PTSD is not just from your abduction.
No, it's right? Trauma on trauma on trauma. It's like a trauma sandwich. It's like a flaky layer biscuit of trauma.
So she's like, Jamie, obviously, she wakes up, Jamie hears her, and he's like, is everything okay? She's like, I'm just going to go down and make a cup of tea. But as the love theme starts, she's downstairs making tea, the love theme starts. And she begins to prepare the mask with ether on it for a getaway.
I did not like this.
Me either. Also, I was shocked because at least in the book, because big bad things happen-ish, ether is hella flammable. And she's just walking around with an open flame, pouring it over the mask right next to an open flame. So I don't know if they've just given up on physics. I don't even know. I don't know. So she gives us the ghost passage from one of the books. When she looks in the mirror, she can see the parts of her face that are like her lips look like her grandmother, or her smile, or her eyes look like her great grandfather. That whole thing is like almost verbatim from the book. It is beautiful. So when that happens, I'm in love. And the episode ends as she falls into a dreamless ether sleep. What do you love about it or not?
No, well, it reminds me of like every TV show that's been on the air for any number of seasons. It feels like they have to make someone gay, someone have a drug problem, someone have a binge eating disorder, someone like it.
They have to keep like, up with the modern issues,
right? And it's like that was so. It's, I mean, yes, it's reflective, but to already have Fergus dealing with alcoholism right now, and you have her snorting ether. I'm just like, this is, it's too much, and it's not accurate. Like that was not in the books.
Not in the books is no defense of anything, because they're past that now, right? We know.
No,
this.
But I mean, it's an out of character thing for the book, Claire. You know, and it's like when they take things out and push other stuff in there, that's going to be a huge arc for the season, because nobody's going to have ether in one episode and then she's never going to snort it again. They're clearly bringing up something that she's using to cope with her PTSD stuff. So it's something that's going to be coming back and recurring. So it's not just going to be like a little one-off thing. We're going to have to hear about this for a while now. So what did they cut out of our short season to put ether in for?
Ether is important because of the anesthetic properties, right?
Oh, I don't have a problem with having the ether. The ether is accurate.
Exactly. You're right. The ether is important. It's from the books. And, you know, she may or may not do a surgery with it. So that is 100% in line. I hear you. I understand. I get you.
So, you know, like the episode of The Black Watch in the first season. What the hell was that?
like this episode where they suddenly didn't have a Murtaugh. What the hell was that?
I mean, I could keep going, but I'm not going to.
No, we've done enough. That.
Again, a special thanks to this episode's co-producer, Hannah.
To find out more about how you too can support us on Patreon, even maybe at the co-producer level, who knows, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you want to join us to continue the conversation, you can go to our Facebook page at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you are interested in having some Outlander Pod branded merch, please go to our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
If you haven't joined our text community, why not? It's free, yo. Text hello or what up, whatever you want. Text something to 916-659-5112. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. Cannot believe we started another season of the show, the TV show. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.